The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
We were talking at the top of the program about the healthcare system and the HSE's advice, if you could call it that, to consider all options before going to hospital, as if there are people out there who will just go, I think I'll just go to hospital for a treat at the moment. You really are at the low point if you consider going to an Irish emergency department right now, and they are slammed. Ken got in contact. He said, I spent 2 weekends in hospital just before Christmas. I had pneumonia. It's hell on earth. Doctors and nurses must be stressed out, patients as well. Everyone I know, says another texter, has been sick over Christmas. There must be a repercussion from the lockdowns and now being exposed. And another texter says, winter after winter, we see a surge in hospitals and nothing has been done. An absolute disgrace by our government. We have talked a lot about the twindemic of COVID and flu. And we didn't really factor in RSV, which is this other respiratory illness that is still circulating in the community and is having a particular impact on the old and the young. And yeah, there is an awful lot of truth in the fact that people got sick over Christmas and everybody had a sniffle or a cough, and some people were more sick than others. And then the poor GPs, when they reopened, they were hit with a bit of a tsunami as well of people wondering, do I need something to shift this bug? Amongst them, Dr. Sinead Byrne, who's a GP based in Dublin City Centre. Good morning, Sinead.
Good morning, Jonathan.
What's it been like since you reopened?
Well, we were kind of working through. I was in Doctor on Call in Dubdoc on the 27th, and it was nearly every, almost every patient that came in presented with this sort of a respiratory illness, a very kind of rattly chest infection and sinus picture. And it really, you know, patients were presenting sort of thick and fast with that. And I think everyone knows somebody who, if you didn't get it yourself, somebody has had that type of chest infection, very deep cough. And then 28th and the 29th, I was working in the practice as well. And same thing, just like a tsunami, like you described it, Jonathan, of respiratory illness. I was speaking to a friend of mine who's a respiratory consultant.
Oh, I think we may have lost you.
Similarly,
we lost you for a second there. Carry on.
Yeah, sorry. So I was speaking to a friend of mine who is a respiratory consultant. She had a similar dose, and so did I. I'm actually only recovering now, kind of finally over that sort of awful sinus and chest infection. And kind of, I did have to work through it. And I have to say, like, you feel pretty lousy, you know, not COVID, not the influenza, but possibly RSV or something like it, like you just mentioned as well. So as you mentioned, Jonathan, I think that's it. We've been kind of protected somewhat, staying away from each other. And then because, you know, of Christmas and more kind of socializing, and then the cold weather, we're huddling in together. People aren't going out as much into the open air, and all those factors, I think, play a part.
Sinead, in general practice, you don't tend to send people to hospital unless you have to. You'll try and treat them and give them advice. But there will inevitably be a cohort you have to send in, if it's for an X-ray or for bloods that need to be done quickly, or someone you're a little bit concerned about that you have triaged. How frustrating is it that you hear the HSE saying, don't go near hospitals, consider all other options? You don't have another option other than sending those people to hospital.
Well, I mean, honestly, Jonathan, I think like the nurses and doctors in the hospitals are like they're under severe pressure, absolutely, you know, and they have worked really, really hard, and particularly with COVID, and now this time of year, it's, you know, it's notoriously busy, and they're under a lot of stress, and I completely appreciate that. But if somebody needs to go, it's not going to stop me sending them in, absolutely. And I think it is important that, you know, anyone who feels unwell speaks to their GP. We are trained triage. We know what needs to go in and what doesn't, what is kind of safe to watch and wait. But, you know, certainly you don't want a situation where somebody is having what they think might be indigestion or chest pain and is sitting at home because they've heard that they shouldn't present to the hospital department, and maybe they're having a massive heart attack and ignoring it and ending up, you know, risking their lives and risking very severe complications as a result. So I think that's important, that people understand that people do still have heart attacks. They still have strokes, they still have critical illnesses, that it can make a massive difference when you are treated appropriately in the emergency departments. And the emergency departments themselves are good at triaging that as well, what needs to come in, what potentially is a stroke, what potentially is a heart attack, what's a critical surgical emergency, that you certainly do not want people like that sitting at home. But as well, yeah, the GP, we know what needs to go in and what doesn't. So I think don't certainly sit at home and go, oh gosh, they're under too much pressure. I better just ignore my symptoms. That would be not a good thing to do. You know, I'd hate to think that, you know, just because of a message from the HSE, that people would be scared and wouldn't want to put people under further pressure when they might be the very person that needs to be seen and attended to.
Dr. Chris Luke, a former ED consultant, but columnist with the Irish Medical Times, now is with us. Good morning, Chris.
Morning, Jonathan.
I doubt very much that anyone would willingly go to an ED right now. So who exactly is this message designed for? Because if there were people who used to take the mick out of the system, even they would be put off going to the ED right now, I'm guessing.
I don't know, Jonathan. I mean, it's very hard to know what to do next, because, you know, most of the quick fixes, the quick wins have been pursued over the last year or two. And we're really looking at the consequences of 25 years of evolving crises and, you know, deficiencies. I mean, my only thing, just to add to what Sinead is saying, is I really do think that we're looking at a new era over the next few years of self-care. I can't see any alternative to that. I think people are going to have to try to work out how to manage many of their illnesses before resorting to you know, professional healthcare. And I do think that people have got to plan ahead now, because, you know, like death, you know, disability, however transient from illness, it is inevitable. And, you know, it is vital, really, that people have whatever they need for self-care, you know, at home, that, you know, they need to stock up on basic medication. There's so much you can get now from the pharmacy. There's so much online. I mean, for example, you know, undertheweather.com, that's a very useful resource for people who are, again, literally under the weather at home.
Yeah, but ultimately, though, it's a problem in our hospitals of capacity. And I was reading a very interesting thread about the NHS and why the NHS, which we always looked to as a kind of a shining beacon, and you would have worked in it as well, not without its challenges, but their issue now is underspend, underinvestment, that they didn't put money into post-hospital services so that when people were ready for discharge, that they'd know where to go. We still have not done that. And while there's brilliant progress being made in community care in this country, it's still not enough that you have people who are fit for discharge in our acute hospitals and they can't be discharged. People are stuck in the ED as a result. We are banging our heads off the same wall that we've been banging our heads off for the last 10 years, except this time we can't go to hospital with it.
Yes, and you're right. I spent 14 years in the NHS and twice as long here. But, you know, our systems are very, very similar. And both the diagnoses and the prognoses are much the same. You know, we have underspent in terms of, you know, bed capacity. You know, we went off on a ludicrous cul-de-sac in terms of reducing our bed stock back in the 80s and 90s. We have grossly underinvested in terms of social care, nursing home care. And of course, you know, the ultimate, you know, red flag for that was the fact that we treated our health, our home helps and our domestics and our domestic you know, professionals and our nursing home professionals so poorly in terms of pay and conditions. And now, sadly, that, you know, that's coming back to bite us. So, yes, I mean, we really do have a you know, the proverbial poly crisis. It's really hard to know where to start. But I you know, my immediate response as an emergency physician, you know, to trade, is that people really do need to think about how they can mind themselves. Because although Sinead talks about the need to triage, the need to you know, head to the hospital immediately if you have a heart attack or a stroke, you know, it can be very confusing for the ordinary person to know, you know, what's the difference between a heart attack and a bad dose of bronchitis. You know, that's a fairly, you know, a simplistic example. But, you know, people do need to think ahead.
Chris, the big fear for any doctor is going to miss something. Or something is going to happen under my watch that I will not have realised. And you know, doctors differ, patients die and all that. I'm guessing that the people working in EDs right now, and Sinead, I'll get your opinion on this from a GP perspective in just a minute, but the people working in EDs right now have the pressure of the patients, but that pressure weighing on them as well.
Yes, and, you know, Jonathan, the number one cause of what's called moral distress or burnout in healthcare professionals is the mismatch between what you yearn to do, you know, the excellence you yearn to deliver in terms of healthcare for the patients in front of you, and literally the inability to provide it in departments that are absolutely rammed, as you say, you know, where you know there are trolleys and patients and companions as far as the eye can see. And we know that the NHS is now admitting, or at least it's been broadly, you know, promulgated in the UK, that 300 or 400 patients a week are dying because of the collapse, the implosion, the overload of their emergency departments. And we've suggested in Ireland that our figure for annually for the number of patients dying avoidably because of overcrowding, because of delays in diagnosis and treatment, is the order of 300 or 400 a year. And sadly, that's likely to go up if the current conditions, you know, persist for a long time. So yes, I mean, it's a terrible source of distress, obviously not just for the patients, but for the staff. And I would suggest that that's actually the number one reason for the exodus and the difficulty in retaining staff, is the fact that you just cannot deliver the care that you've trained for and dreamt of giving for and aspired to give for years. And that's, you know, that's, people choose a career in emergency care or in general practice for a reason. And that reason is often because they have these, you know, precious dreams. And, you know, it's the old tread softly because you tread my dreams. And many healthcare professionals' dreams are being crushed underfoot as we speak by the current conditions.
Okay. Sinead, it must be as bad in GP practice. And I know, again, from speaking to GPs, the idea of dealing with somebody, sending them to an ED, seeing them coming back, I came away from the emergency department. I mean, the fear that somebody, there's something wrong. There's only so much you can do in your practice or in GDOC or wherever you are. There's only so much you can do. You really have to hand the responsibility over, and you must live in fear that something will be missed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think I agree with wholeheartedly there with what Chris is saying, that moral distress and burnout, absolutely. Like, you spoke very well about that. And I think that's very true, that is a big part of why doctors and colleagues leave. And it's really sad that, you know, so many of my own classmates, excellent doctors, brilliantly trained, are not, you know, working locally. They're in Australia and they're not here because actually they can provide that care. But I suppose it's very complex. And yeah, absolutely, you worry. I find sometimes you think you've exhausted all options as a GP and you've done everything you can, and actually somebody's presenting on a third occasion to do with the same maybe symptoms. And we sort of have a rule in GP in our head, if somebody's presented for a third time, it is time to then refer. But then yes, sometimes we see, you know, you thought this was a second opinion and actually maybe, you know, the emergency department didn't have the capacity to do any more or haven't done any more. And then it's a knock-on effect because it's back to you, the GP, who, you know, has responsibility for that patient or your patient. You care about your patient. You want to do the best. And it's not a perfect system by any means. And it has knocked on the hospital is under pressure, and so is the GP. And you can only do your best. And sometimes it does feel a little bit impossible. Yeah, you know, and you kind of are writing letters repeatedly. This is urgent. You know, even as an outpatient, to get an urgent appointment. It's very complex. You just try to do your best.
A lot of people are texting in about this and giving us their experience over the last couple of days. Alan said, it's fine if a doc physically sees a patient, but what about the DDoc sending every person to ED with phone consultations? Also, a lot of ED presentations are mental health and people with addiction problems. How can we not fix our health service and not be so frightened every winter? COVID is being used as an excuse, as another texter. They can't use that as an excuse for much longer. My father, says someone else, was on a trolley in Dublin Dublin over the weekend. The trolley was disgusting itself. There was spilled urine on the floor, not cleaned for hours. How is this possible? Is it simple understaffing? And one more, self-care all well and good, but children and vulnerable should be prioritised by the system. I had a sick child on Christmas Eve. The GP wasn't open. 8-hour wait for the ED to even triage. And meanwhile, the child is going downhill, shivering with a fever. In the end, I managed to get a video doc, and then it was almost impossible to find a chemist to fill the prescription. Not good enough. And Chris, that is the problem. In adults who have kind of a little bit of understanding, it might be easier to self-diagnose and self-care. I mean, I've always said the benchmark of how bad the system is when children are suffering, and by God, kids are at the sharp end at the moment.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't agree more. And I mean, I physically wince whenever I hear of these micro critiques, because they're all absolutely right and they all indicate an issue. I mean, I'll say one thing, Jonathan, it is always possible to do better. It is always better to tweak. It's always possible to tweak at the edges. And I would say to the management of the hospital where those trolleys are filthy is to get your teams, your SWAT teams of cleaners in there. Every hospital should be sending reinforcements to every emergency department of non-clinical staff. They should make sure the staff, the nursing staff, are coming into a clean staff room. They should make sure the nursing and medical staff have coffee and tea and sandwiches, because they're working non-stop, sometimes with 3 minutes for a break in the toilet. They need to have SWAT teams of cleaners that are there providing chairs, providing clean water, providing distractions for children. There's so much that can be done beyond the clinical. It doesn't have to be clinicians, and it shouldn't be clinicians like nurses and doctors looking for chairs and, you know, trying to find a space for someone to sit or even lie on. If I was to triage, I'd say, you know, let's just try and stabilise the nursing home sector. Let's actually, by way of some urgent government action, let us do something to stabilize the nursing home sector, because I keep hearing about the fact that they can't retain staff because the staff are paid so poor. The government needs to do something about the conditions and the salary for nursing home staff, and work trim at every conceivable edge of this poly crisis, whether, as I say, it's directing as many in-house staff from hospitals down towards the emergency department. Because, you know, very often, which is absolutely another bit heartbreaking situation, is where the emergency department is like a war zone, and yet if you walk 20 yards away from the hospital ED into the hospital proper, you know, it's all, you know, peace and tranquility. That shouldn't be the case. If it's a war zone and emergency department, the hospital is not responding collectively, holistically, as it must. It really, really must. And, you know, patients may need to be decanted as an extra bed or two on corridors up the house or in the wards. And I'm sorry, but I do think that, you know, at this state of utter, you know, distress and overwhelming situation in the ED, we need to stop elective work if necessary, and all hands on deck. Hospitals have got to respond holistically, and society, I'm afraid, has to respond holistically. So people need to do everything they can to stop. Like, for example, on a frosty morning yesterday, don't go out if you're likely to fall. You know, don't keep the elderly in if they're frail and they're wobbly. You know, if you have to go out, make sure you've got gloves and sticks and all sorts to prop yourself up. You know, this is flu season. That last contributor is right. This is not a winter issue. This is all year round. But there are winter factors. Like, we do have three viruses at the moment, the RSV, the COVID and the flu, that are combining. They're synergistically creating a massive wave of it, including my own home. I mean, we've been afflicted like Sinead and her colleagues. So, you know, it is that the disease is very, the viral upper respiratory tract or lower respiratory tract disease is very real, but there is a lot that you can do to mind yourself. And as I say, a council of despair is of no value. We have to realise that there are always things that we can do, front, back, side and top and below, for all this right, crisis.
Chris Luke, columnist with the Irish Medical Times, Sinead Byrne, GP based in Dublin City Centre. Thank you both very much for joining us. Lots of texts, and I'll get to them in just a minute. But the thought struck me while listening to both Sinead and Chris there. That kind of links into what we were talking about in the last hour, which is the state provision of important service. And I was drawing on the idea that it's a bit of a nonsense that the state doesn't now intervene and provide that early childhood service and pay for it. Because we wouldn't ask private schools to take on the responsibility of public work and just give them a load of cash and say, off you go. But the state has a system in place that provides for free, proper free education at primary and secondary level. And it was when Chris was talking there about where do we decant, to use his word, where do we decant people who are ready to go? The answer, of course, is private nursing homes, because the state abdicated its responsibility some time back for care of the elderly from the community hospital system, which wasn't perfect, but at the same time was a bit tricky and expensive. And we decided to set up a network of private nursing homes right around the country. There is something to be said for, I mean, private nursing homes do a great job, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, you have this desperate need for a facility like that. And we're relying on the private sector, with all the pressures that the private sector is under, to provide that service and still turn a profit. Something doesn't fit. And if you look at the two groups that we're talking about there, the youngest and the oldest, the two most vulnerable in our society. And here we are looking at it going, God, I don't know what's wrong. How come those two groups, they're the ones that are suffering most? Makes no sense, does it?
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.